You're listening to Sound Poetry. I am your host, David Gilmore. You're listening to Sound Poetry. This is Radio Tacoma, KTAH 101.9 FM, and I'm your host, David Gilmore, with poet Derek Sheffield, a poet of renown in the central northwest of Washington, teacher at Wenatchee Valley College. He's definitely a poet of this age, the age that we are in and coming into. He has some collections of works through The Second Skin, and more recently in 2021, Not for Luck, which has some very fine comments by poets and editors. The book is published by Wheelbarrow Books out of Michigan State University Center for Poetry and has some very well-known names in the editorial staff. Carolyn Forche, for one, Mark Doty, for another. And I believe Derek has met some of these poets. Merwin, I think M.S. Merwin's mentioned in one of your poems, but also Peter Sears. And so names that some of you who are listening will perhaps know of. But welcome to Sound Poetry, Derek. I know that you've got many, many of your poems published in fine journals. If some of the listeners wish to go to your site, they'll find quite a list of those, and especially if they get your beautiful 2021 book, Not for Luck. So we're glad to have you on Sound Poetry. In fact, it's a real pleasure. I'm looking forward to hear a real treasury of readings here. So would you begin and tell us a little more about yourself if you want, or if you wish, you can just begin reading, because I think your life is pretty well recorded throughout your poetry.
Oh, thank you, David, for that introduction. So I think I will just hop in here with a poem and maybe set it up a little bit before I read it. I thought we would start at the beginning. This is the first poem in my first full-length collection. It's called Ornithology 101, from Through the Second Skin. And the poem was, did indeed come from my life in that I had taken a class from one of my colleagues at Wenatchee Valley College, Dr. Dan Stevens, an ornithology class. And this was in the time of my life that I refer to as BC. This is BC, Sheffield, before children. When I had the time to do such things as take classes for fun and so forth. And I realized at the end of that class that I had seen the world through the lens of science as offered by that class and my colleague. So I set out to, in a short poem, try to distill that experience. So this is Ornithology 101. Now that you have staked their skeletons, eyed the scope of a throat, prodded strutted white ribs, pinched a wishbone for resilience, thumbed a keeled sternum's edge, still trying to steer scattered feathers, stroked a hummingbird's mum iridescence, roughed the white down of a great egret, slit and stuffed as last year's final project, sprinted with a severed wing to catch the physics, given new vision to a blackbird with two dabs of cotton. You can leave with an A in Class Avies. Now that you have looked through birds, you see the diagrammatic movements of geese across the blue sky, dotted lines narrowing a million years, you expect from every American goldfinch, thistles, and sadness. And when you walk out among the world's perches and Latinate streaks at the edge of sight, the air is feathers measuring the bones of your face.
Unforgettable experience you had in that class, given all of the experiences with different birds that you have named in this poem. And yet, I do like very much the idea of the dotted lines of the geese narrowing a million years. This is something I think very thematic in your work. You take a moment, something that can be almost stilled by the words, and yet you carry it on through ages. And that is, I think, a very remarkable way that you work with time. Well, here's some more of that, I hope. And I do believe I've read a couple that include such thematic notions. So very good. Let's go on. And you can just read to your heart's content.
Yeah. Well, thank you, David. I just want to say that in thinking of such poems as poems of moments, you're in excellent company in that I remember that a very fine poet, one of my favorite poets, who happens to be not far from you in Lakewood, is Alan Braden.
And we've done him. Yes, we did an interview with Alan.
Oh, fantastic. So I know that in a little review somewhere, Alan had written about the work and used the same terms. So here's another moment or two. A good fish. Jerk that bitch, urges my guide, and I give my shuddering pole a jerk, hooking the throat of the first steelhead of my life. Reel 'em, he mutters, and revs the motor. I horse my pole and reel and horse. The boat's mascot whines, her claws clicking. Let it take some line. My father, uncle, and cousin are reeling. First fish, they shout, and I shout, what a fighter! A silver spine touches the air. There, he points, a hen. And guess what? She's going to join the club. Somehow spotting in that glimpse the smooth place along her back where a fin had been snipped. He leans over the gunwale, dips a net, and scoops her into the boat. She is thick with a wide band of fiery scales, slapping the aluminum bottom. Welcome to the club, he says, and clobbers her once and again and once more before she goes still. A bleeder, he says, shaking his head and handing her to me. I curl a finger through a gill the way you're supposed to, determined not to let her slip and flop back to the river, a blunder I'd never live down. A good fist. Fish, I mean. A good fish.
Slip of the tongue there at the end with a fist and a fish. Brutal, brutal poem. You had an awakening there, didn't you, with your competition with the fish?
Well, exactly. You mentioned that slip of the tongue. It was actually a slip of the pencil, or my own bad handwriting that explained how the word fist got in there. When I read it back through it, I thought fist, and like, Oh my God, that is such a surprising and yet perfect word for what I was feeling in those moments. And, you know, the word you used is brutality. And yes, that's what it felt like to me. And what's interesting to me about this poem is that I've had especially young men reach out to me from different parts of the country, usually more rural, who just love this poem as a fishing poem. I marvel at how they're not hearing what you and I are hearing here, and that is the brutality. And there was this excitement in the air of this occasion, and it was the first steelhead of my life. And yet, as I saw how this life was being treated, and the just everything about it felt wrong, wrong, wrong.
Yes, the malicious ambiguity of welcome to the club.
Yeah, the joking about the taking of a life.
Yeah, a great experience in a lot of young people's lives. But sometimes when one looks back on it, and if you can remember the fear and the chagrin in the aftermath, that's good. But those that just go on glorying in it and perhaps wishing for more experiences like it miss the point altogether.
Well, exactly. And, you know, one of the things I don't think I knew about it until later, when the editors of Poetry Magazine were talking about this poem on their podcast. I think it was Chris Wyman and Don Scher who pointed out that there was this male and female dichotomy going on. And here's this, you know, group of men, and the fish just happens to be a hen, you know, she's a female. And so I think that there's another kind of club that is addressed there.
Yes, you also have another poem from that same collection that is about risk. And it's an interesting poem written in two columns with a gap between, which I don't know why. Maybe I have my own reasons why it might be that way. Why did you choose that pattern with the white spaces?
Good question. I chose that. In the end, it is a choice and it is a decision, but it was a form that suggested itself in the writing of the poem. And as I was writing it and re-envisioning it and going through the process, the reciprocal creation that happens when one person is messing around with words, this form suggested itself. And I've written several form poems, and that's really the way it's happened every time. They all start out just sort of looking like either prose on the page or lines between 5 and 12 syllables long or whatnot. And then at some point, there was the seed of this form that was born, and I nurtured it. What I like about it is it's a little herky-jerky. And as you're reading the poem, your eyes have to jump across that caesura. And there are many what we call high enjambments in the poem, where there's a very close relationship between the word at the end of the line and the word beginning the next line. There's a lot of eye skipping across the page here and there.
That's a very good reason for it to make the reader do a little gymnastics with the eyes. And yes, that is risking losing your place sometimes in a poem. like this with two lines, the column missing the next enjambment. But does it matter sometimes? I think it's very interesting sometimes that you can maybe read the first column by itself and the second one and see what makes sense as if you go down it. But there's also a riding poem, driving poem, and there's two lanes perhaps on the road too. You can take it many different ways. But yes, you've got a risk in potential here. Read that one for us.
Oh, yes. And yeah, thank you for saying that about the two lanes. That was something I think I did think about, but not until later. And of course, it's got one of those titles that runs right into the poem. Sometimes I risk our lives, driving her to school, tilting the mirror till the road behind gives way to the one in her face, till I nearly steer by the reflection of her reflection. Chewing mouth, eyes that flick from thing to each through her, momentous thing. What house is that as we pass a winery? Eyebrows leaping, dimples dimpling. My see-through highway revealing at once what passes without, passes within. A secret I must keep, for if she sees me seeing me in her, my eyes and dimples, then we are lost in her self-consciousness. I must be an afterthought to sip at the lip of her streaming immediacy, for my eyes to oscillate between the broken yellow line and gaps in her bangs and teeth. Road ahead and reckless glass aimed back at what will go on.
Yes, quite an experience of reflection in several senses of that word there, right?
Yes, exactly.
And the consciousness that's raised by the experience of it, because you're traveling, going at speed. Very interesting poem. This one, your daughter's quite young, is she? On the way to school, you're taking her early grades?
Kindergarten, first, second grade, and young enough where she's just pure aliveness. She's a rod of pure now.
Yes. So we're going to another now, which is the one that is from the Cascadia Field Guide, Art, Ecology, Poetry, which is not yet published, coming in March of 2023, an anthology of sorts, is it?
Yes, it is. It's an artistic field guide to our bioregion. And with two editors, Liz Bradfield and C. Marie Furman, I've worked over the last 2 years to compile about 130 different poems to represent 130 different beings or species of our region. And all of these beings and poems are organized into different communities or life zones, such as pine forest or shrub steppe or temperate rainforest or Salish Sea and so forth. For each being or species, there's a poem, there's original visual art, and then there are these prose bits, which we three wrote, which are, we call them being stories. They are wonder-inducing bits of ecology. Wherever possible, we have brought in, alongside Western science, native science. And one of my co-editors, C. Marie, is a language keeper, and she is native. and her help in that regard was essential. It's a being, it's a place-centered work, and I'm so excited about it. This is my only poem that's in the book, along with those other, 138 poems from over 100 different poets in our region. I was looking over and listening to some of the interviews that you've done with poets, and most of the poets you've interviewed are in this book.
I see. That's very good. Well, we've been choosing quite well.
I'll say. Well,
so let's see if people can guess what this creature is or is like, and whether they can guess it before it comes. I doubt it. An odd creature, right?
How we look. Fur fat and stock still in the trail. They appear to be looking into a mythic sky, posed for a feral portrait or a wish to draw us closer before they turn and level a frontal marmot scrutiny. The way their noses aim askance says they're not here, or we are gone, or we are here, but they're not sure. Upright on boulders, they are ready to tumble at the shrill signal if we become, in a blink, by sneeze or shuffle, believable. Our pack-heavy shapes gathered in their sky look up to Shuckson. How distant and present it juts. How sharp a lookout. Clarity we envy through tilted glass until from every nowhere the whiteout. When the peak disappears, we turn and labor down the moraine, switchbacking like mules silently spaced in the falling snow. While we drive our miles and climb to bright rooms, they settle below in a general huddle, slowing for their long dream. Between one flake and the infinite next, one pulse beat and the second, our burdened forms waver and loom, weave, and are gone.
You're like a pack of marmots hurrying down, hurrying down the mountain. A little bit bulky with your backpacks, I'm sure.
Indeed.
Yeah. Fur fat stock still marmot. If anybody's seen a marmot, that description there of their being nonchalant, looking a little bit at you and not at you, a little bit, that you know you're there, saying, nah, you're not there. Nah, you're not there. And then you are there, and so they get out of there. Very, very good moment of indecision there in the creature. Yeah. Now, the next one, which is Dear America, Letters of Hope, Habitat, Defiance and Democracy. That also is an anthology that you had put together earlier, isn't it?
Yes, this was a book that came out in 2020, and it was a collection of letters, poems, essays, art, and other things, cri de coeurs that were published at terrain.org. Many of them were between November of 2016 and January of 2020. It was a really kind of incredible moment for terrain.org. I'm the poetry editor there and have been since 2013, but that's just a small part of its history. It's began in 97 or 98. It's the world's right at the beginnings of the internet, and it's the world's oldest place-based journal of art and writing. And in November of 2016, in response to readers and contributors, we started a Letter to America series, in that was a response to the brutality of the 2016 presidential election. It's organized by themes or issues, you might say, that were things that came bubbling up to the surface during that time. It wasn't just about, say, one person or one election, of course, but themes going much deeper and longer through this the place of our mutual home. And so we collected many of these letters, poems, essays, and artworks, and including photographs from Pete Souza, who was Barack Obama's photographer, and opened his coffers to us. Attorney General Bob Ferguson from Washington State contributed a letter about his role in defeating the first so-called travel ban focused on Muslim people coming from Muslim countries, and many others. Pulitzer winner Jericho Brown wrote a poem for the book. Arthur Zee, who won the National Book Award that year, also wrote a poem for the book. And then many other writers and artists from that I hadn't been aware of before sent in these incredibly moving pieces that we collected there. About 30% of the book is original material. So this was my original contribution to the book. And it came about because of our Attorney General, Bob Ferguson, who was a friend of mine in college, and I've known him for a very long time. It was because I was taking Russian at University of Washington that I ended up meeting him and becoming friends with Bob.
Yeah.
And so he invited me and my daughter to join him and his family and a few representatives from some from tribes and environmental organizations on a protest hike along our coast, our wild Washington coast, that mirrored a hike that William O. Douglas had led, I think, 60 years before, something like that, in an effort to keep roads from being built along that stretch of the coast.
Right. And Washingtonians, it's an interesting poem because it dawns on you where this is.
It was about 20 miles and 20 or so miles. And we were joined by another old friend from college and his daughter. So it was the three of us and our kids and some other people who you know got to know and became friends with, and my friend Tim McNulty, who's a terrific poet, environmental activist out on the Olympic Peninsula, was there as well. But we were protesting not roads, but at that time the Trump administration was proposing to drill for oil in that region. And so that was really what had got us going. That's what led Bob to do this protest hike. And so this is What Will Keep Us. And it's dedicated to Katie and Kelsey on the Save Our Coast hike. Katie is Bob's daughter and Kelsey is mine. And it has an epigraph from Peter Douglas. The coast is never saved. It's always being saved. Every pack-heavied step over sandhoppers and weed-slicked rocks, through driftwood scatters and the chill of tide waters, over wooded headlands as wildfires blaze north, south, east, every step says, stay. I know mermaids aren't real, Kelsey says. But Daddy, look, holding a whip of bull kelp whose light bulb face is a brown-green eye under ribbons of translucent hair. We trudge our miles, stepping over oscillating anemones and sunlit pools to pause at hole in the wall and let their tentacles tongue our dipped fingers. And what's this holographic sheen?
not the oil we would keep from the shore, and not plastic we see, just a rainbow's iridescence beaming from a plant. Over teeth of barnacled rocks poking from pools of sand crabs and sculpin, through foamy maroons, emeralds, violets, tangles of surf grass and lettuce cushioning our steps. We hike, flies parting briefly for our ankles as we take in the gleaming curve of the otter's tail as she rises and dives into clear shallows, a pliable needle threading us and them, water, land, and rippled sky where the numberless legs of sandpipers twiddle their skittery flocks always just ahead. Or even the reek slap of rot from a carcass too far gone for ravens or gulls, we hike for our own place among the eaters and the eaten pricking at us as we see how wide the jawbone, how long and curved the fangs. For the piping stutter of a crow-mobbed eagle landing on a shaggy bough, for the lightest touches of day mist on our skin and our headlamps in the night lighting the tracks of slugs, silvering up every spruce trunk's loom. We hike for what will keep us if we keep it. On a bare stretch of sand ahead, a boulder splits into two bear cubs whose dark heads swivel our way before they turn as one toward the woods and lope out of sight. To go on in the multitudinous dream we need to be beyond our reach. Out past the breaking lines of waves we can just glimpse through binoculars, where the rounded humps of humpbacks slope one way and gray whales the other. 60-some sea otters floating on their backs have knit themselves into a living net. Weft, warp, leg, paw, kelp blades fixed by holdfasts to the deepest rocks. What is it they catch in their drift of sleep amid mists and rolling webs of stars? Far enough where, if we fail, the drills will rise. And what now, as they ride, day swells in and out of sight in the rhythm of our own breathing. Our hike ends at the beginning of what the map calls Wedding Rocks, where people of the macaw long ago carved the round faces of sun and moon among fishers and fish, a whale and orca. What feelings spilled through them as they knelt in these same unceasing sounds of waves, chip after chip falling away. We trace the grooves with our fingers, 5 centuries of wind laced with the wet snorts and hunger cries of passing animals. Kelsey kneels over some new swirl of shell and exclaims. Katie says not a word, drawing with her stick something in the sand we can't yet see.
Keep has a really profound resonance in you. I see it throughout your poems. The keeping.
Yeah.
What meanings? What's the omnibus of meanings that come with that word for you?
I think it is just about a way of being here. I think it speaks to why I am drawn to poetry, even as it's a way of sort of understanding and discovery and exploration and surprise. It's also a way of clutching as best I can life and getting my grasp into it with language as best I can.
Yeah.
Even as, of course, it's always slipping away. What falls away is always and is near.
Thank you so much, Derek. It was a real pleasure to have you on the show.
Well, thank you, David. And it's been such a pleasure. I've really enjoyed talking to you and thinking about some of these poems through your astute remarks.
Well, thank you. You've been listening to Sound Poetry on Radio Tacoma with poet Derek Sheffield, and I've been your host, David Gilmore.